Getting all this solid gold.
I got that.
Keep it in. No cuts.
Half a burp.
They didn't know it was a burp. You got me talking about whether the mic's off. This is all going to get cut, so fuck it.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of What a Waste of Time. Once again, I'm Jim, and I'm here with my friends Nick and Callum.
It didn't give me room to say which one I was, but that's cool. I'm Nick. Hello.
Hi, I'm Callum. Hello!
That was a weird voice.
And Callum, this was your idea, so why don't you introduce the topic?
Well, I apologise. Steven Spielberg said that he is going to lobby the Board of Governors or High Council or Circle of Nine or whoever it is that runs the Motion Picture Academy. And tell them that they should not be accepting Netflix movies, because movies made by Netflix are by definition TV movies in the eyes of Steven Spielberg, and therefore should be given awards at the Emmys, not at the Oscars. This has prompted a discussion about the relative value of Netflix films, and whether they are quote-unquote movies or not. I also thought this is like a maybe a jumping off point for a wider discussion about how we choose to watch content, because I think the three of us watch things differently sometimes. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to start the timer. Boom. Well, I guess I'm sort of irritatingly just on the fence about this issue, like I am with most issues, because on the one hand, Steven Spielberg has kind of a point. On the other hand, it's like, well, we also have to acknowledge that media and the way we watch it is changing, and the way we give accolades will have to change to reflect that. And I'm not sure the way to do that is to exclude anyone.
I mean, my take, I have a couple of takes on this, because I read the article that Callum sent over to me. Thank you very much, Callum.
Right.
I was struck by a couple of things. Is that, one, the fact that TV movie, quote-unquote, is an easily definable... The article seemed to frame it that, you know, he was saying, well, it's clearly a TV movie. And I'm like, what is that, Stephen? Is it, as you say, is it a movie that is meant to be shown on the television? Is it something that's limited by a particular budget? Because he also cited complaints that Netflix, with their billions upon billions of dollars, could pour absurd amounts of money into their Oscar campaigns to get their shit noticed. Which just sort of seems a bit like, oh no, I'm not the biggest fish in the pond anymore. It's going to make it harder for my films of whatever quality to get noticed by the Academy, because Netflix will be fielding like 20 really good products with billions of advertising dollars behind them, and I'll find it hard to do that. For me, this doesn't really come down to a complaint about the relative quality or even construction of film. I feel this is very much about economics. And I feel it is the Academy, Spielberg being a voice for the Academy, to basically say, we don't like the fact that a much larger, more powerful industrial force is going to be able to come in and, by the rules of the Academy, just be able to sort of exert its will and win lots of awards. And it sort of removes, it sort of creates something, it could create potentially a sort of soft monopoly over winning awards. And to me, because I think awards shows are bullshit, and I think the idea of actual dedicated campaigns where they have to go on the press junket and spend tons and tons of money on getting their shit noticed in lieu of actually just having a good film that people want to see win an award and be, you know, rewarded for the quality of it, is kind of bullshit. So I'm like, oh hey, how sad for you, capitalist overlords in the fucking Oscars. How sad for you that someone with a lot more money and power is coming along and kicking all your sandcastles over, going, no, I've built something wonderful. You all have to look at it because I'm paying you. So yeah, I feel it's about economics, and like, it's a badly phrased point that Spielberg has made, because it, you know, or rather, I think it's well phrased because he's trying to obfuscate what it's really about. He's like, well, it's a TV movie, this sort of dismissive kind of notion that there's some kind of benchmark of quality for film as a thing in the cinema. let's all remember that, like, fucking Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets is a cinema movie, and that movie's trash. I love it, but it's trash. It's not going to win any awards because it's trash.
Well, I do want to, on that point, sort of also mention, like, the way some people have responded to it, to that comment has been, like, to sort of shit on Ready Player One. By comparison, you should shit on Ready Player One, but at the
it's
same,
so fun.
But at the same time, it is better than book. At the same time, that like the merit of Ready Player One shouldn't really affect Steven Spielberg's point.
I think this is the thing. If he's going to say, if he's going to imply that the films on Netflix are not good enough to the ambiguous quality of whatever good means in this sentence. To be eligible for the Oscars, you then have to say, well, if you're one of the most, you know, well-known and prolific directors of the era, and you want to talk about objective quality, let's look at your last big film. Oh, it was a big poopy poop. Darn!
I also think the more relevant example of this in Spielberg's personal history that he brings to this is the... because obviously he's lost personally in the past instance where the power dynamics in the Academy shifted, which was... when Harvey Weinstein, by basically figuring out what probably already existed and was true, realised that the Oscars was essentially a political machine, not an artistic one, and therefore lobbied it as a political machine, and therefore managed to get Shakespeare in Love Best Film against Saving Private Ryan. And,
that is wild.
Yeah, and...
gosh.
Yeah, and so Spielberg has always kind of... therefore been very outspoken about, you know, the Academy and how it should be run ever since, because he thinks his movie should have won Best Film. I've never seen Saving Private Ryan from start to finish. I've only seen the beach scene, like everyone else. I've seen Shakespeare in Love. It would surprise me if it was the best film on that year, you know. But it's so... and the thing is that part of the baggage that he brings for this, and it is... there was an article somewhere that referred to this as like... basically, this is just like old man shouts at cloud. But it's like Spielberg is coming from a place where Harvey Weinstein, a man who is about as close to objectively evil as we can get, once took a Best Film Oscar from him, effectively. Mm. Admittedly, he did not at the time know all the facts about Harvey Weinstein. If he was, he should have fucking said something. But so he's looking at that and being like, look, it's bad when people mess with the Academy as a system. Therefore, this thing is also bad. And it's like, no, this is so different from what happened to you.
Mm.
And you can't put the two together. Also, the system which you want to protect is the system which just chose Green Book as the best film of the year.
Yikes.
And like, I'm not saying we need to dive into why Green Book was bad. There are plenty of people who've written very, you know...
It's about race. Yeah. That's why it's bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Badness is how it deals with race.
Exactly.
In a movie about race. That was the one thing you had to get right!
Yeah, just because, you know, when Spike Lee and the guy who directed Dumb and Dumber have both made movies about race, the one you give the award to is the guy who directed Dumb and Dumber. Like,
wow. Well, I mean, you have a point, but that is a little, like, it is a little snobbish to say that... why am I defending Green Book?
No, but I have no problem with Dumb and Dumber. Yeah. But it's not snobbish to say that... okay, so, I guess I use Dumb and Dumber as a shorthand for a person who is white...
yeah.
And has no history of making movies about race.
Yeah.
And basically was like, you know what I'm going to have a go at? Movies about race.
Yeah.
Whereas Spike Lee made a monumental, titanic contribution to making cinema less, and society and culture as a whole, less racist. We all know that the Oscars is not just the film that, you know, the film that's up that year.
Yeah.
The history of the filmmaker goes against it. And of those two people, the one the Academy chose... was the director of Dumb and Dumber.
Was also, Black Panther was nominated for Best Picture as well, so we had three films nominated.
Exactly.
On the subject of race, and...
I would have personally taken Black Panther out of those three.
Yes. Yeah,
and I like Black Klansman, but after we talked before about Boots Riley's, like, sort of saying, yes, this film is good, and Spike Lee is a good director with a tremendous pedigree of doing lots of really good work. However, this particular movie has a couple of very problematic aspects with how it frames, you know, black police relationships, how it frames the lead character and sort of, you know, sanitizes his backstory of not him actually sort of kind of fucking over an awful lot of black people and having strange relationships with them for literal years undercover. And that's a whole kind of weird scummy thing. Whereas Black Panther was it's in many ways an idealized, hyper interesting cultural touchstone that resonated with so many people because it's a fucking mega Marvel movie. And also, it had the broadest reach by far. And, like, had some of the best portrayals of black characters with agency and owning their blackness and fighting against oppressive systems. And you're like, oh!
Well, I don't think it's really our place to say whether or not Black Panther or Black Klansman was more deserving of the Oscar. But true. I think it is definitely true of the three films that were nominated, Green Book is the least deserving.
Mm. Yes.
One thing, can I say, on a slight tangent, sort of, a thing that I find interesting is, like, so one of the reasons that Harvey Weinstein, for example, does these Oscar campaigns is because it makes him...
Well, did.
Made, yeah.
Nothing anymore.
Yeah. Okay, so your big name Hollywood producers, the reason why you run these campaigns really, ultimately, in most cases, is because of the financial returns you'll get on that. If your film wins Best Picture, or even if your film gets nominated for Best Picture, you get to put that on the posters, you get to put that on the DVD cases, you get to raise the profile of your product.
I mean, that's really what the Academy Awards are for.
I know, and this is we're coming back to the point of Steven Spielberg trying to claim it's a specifically artistic thing. While I don't like awards shows on several levels, I do think it's important to have genuinely meaningful creatives recognised in their field, and treat as like, no, you deserve to be recognised for the incredible work that you've done in this performance or in your career, etc, etc. Like, I wouldn't take Olivia Colman's award away from her because she's fantastic and she's had a brilliant career and she's done really well, and having this as a nice apex of like, you're the fucking great right now. You did it. You were the best one this year. Cool. Big thumbs. You get to have that. But I think it's kind of interesting that Marvel, as in which you've talked about before, seems anathema to these sort of big high-profile awards shows, because even though it's all really about economics and Marvel just makes shitloads of money, I'm like, give them an Oscar. There's no reason not to. Everybody gets a nice payday when Marvel gets a big, sexy Oscar nomination and wins something.
But it is worth recognizing that, like, whatever you think about Marvel's films, they have achieved something that has never been achieved before. And that's I think, yeah, that's probably worth recognising.
Yeah.
And also, like, there's not... I mean, you know, it would be lovely if they did make a film like Black Panther every year. They're probably not gonna.
No.
And so, you know, they give them one while they deserve it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As opposed to... I mean, like, this is the obnoxious joke I made on Facebook, but it's like, the Academy will never give Marvel an Oscar for a film they made. What they will do is give an Oscar in 30 years to the dewy-eyed biopic of Kevin Feige and how he founded Marvel as a studio, because that's the kind of movie the Academy like, but they don't like Marvel movies.
They do like movies about movies.
Yeah.
Because they get to see themselves and think, oh, this makes me feel warm inside and acknowledges all of the time and effort I've put into this industry.
Yeah. Flashbacks of The Artist.
Yeah.
I like The Artist.
I like The Artist.
It's a fun film, it does nothing new. And
no,
it's
specifically
it
by definition. Yeah, by definition. Yes.
Yeah, sort of remember, like what if in like 50 years time we get like a nostalgic pastiche of a Michael Bay Transformers film, and everyone goes like, oh yes, look how vapid and formless the CGI looks, I remember that, given an award. What?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah. So I think the thing of Spielberg, though, is like, I think he's basically a less relevant director now than he has been in times past. I think this is a combination of him trying to cling to relevancy. It's someone who's scared of the changing face of media consumption. It's about economics, and honestly, I agree with Callum's take that it's like he doesn't want to potentially lose out on an Oscar that he might get, you know, for against like some young up-and-coming Netflix person who was just given like, you know, 60 grand and a handycam and made something good.
I mean, as it said, like, the thing that... the article I said, you know, it's really, and I do like the reason I sent you guys that article was because it was one of the few that put
tell the listener which article that was.
It was on the AV Club.
Yeah.
So the AV Club's coverage made a point of showing that Ava DuVernay tweeted saying that she had the opposite view of Steven Spielberg, but because of her position within the Academy, lower than Spielberg's.
That there's a hierarchy.
What? Well, yeah, it's almost like, oh, the black female director can't. Yeah,
can't do it.
Yeah, she's not allowed into that room. And so she's literally like, I can't go to this meeting, but I have the opposite view, and I think Netflix is doing good stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, they are giving voices to people that Spielberg's like circle won't.
Can I ask a question to you guys? I think the thing that I'm kind of arriving at is that in some ways I think the Netflix streaming model in some ways, by design, forces directors to make better stuff. Because rather than, like, you could make a bad movie, and, like, you can shit it out into the cinema, and no one goes to see it, and it crashes and burns, but it's like, oh, well, that project was unsuccessful, and if you are, you know, say, a wealthy white man, you're probably going to be offered another thing, because, well, he did that movie, and it came out, you know, that's the bare minimum. Whereas if Netflix...
Isn't it, Duncan Jones?
Whereas if on Netflix, if you consistently put out bad stuff, the result is that people will cancel their subscription. And then after that, it doesn't matter how much good stuff you put out. You have lost that revenue that could have gone towards all future projects. It's, in many ways, it's a safer system because the money is, in some senses, guaranteed. But in the other way, I think there's a lot more risk to it because if you have a particularly bad run of putting out things that are misjudged or poorly received or whatever, people might go, oh, well, maybe I'll switch over to the Disney streaming service that is coming out or whatever. Or maybe I'll take my streaming service money to Amazon Prime or Hulu and go to something that's got a better pedigree to it.
I think that's true, although before, as I'm so often inclined, to get to march forward into the future, it's worth remembering, and I say this as someone who enjoys some but not all of this filmmaker's work. Comedy was called him a filmmaker. One of Netflix's most profitable picture deals to date has been their 10-picture deal with Adam Sandler.
Ah, yeah.
So it's like, they go to the computer and they go, computer, what film do you want us to make?
Yeah.
Now, you can sort of take that, it's like they are making movies that really are for everyone, and that means they're going to make some stuff that you really, really don't like, and some stuff that you really, really do like.
Yeah, so, like, Netflix do make a lot of bad stuff, so, like, I don't quite follow the assertion that, like, oh, if people make bad content, then people, like, viewers will cancel their Netflix subscriptions, because it just means the bad stuff gets buried under the good stuff.
Well, I also think that, like, if you said to Netflix, does your model stop people making bad films, their response would be, define bad.
Yeah, well...
You know, it's like, that's the...
I don't want to say, like, it prevents it. I think it's... I feel my view is, and, like, obviously, you both work in the film industry, film, TV, production of stuff, whereas I don't. So I'm sure I will defer to your more informed opinions. But it seems to me that there's less... I feel like Netflix is a better place to incentivize better content, or rather, it's better structured to cater more specifically to specific audiences. It can have more nuance, it can have more specificity, there's more area for experimentation, and through experimentation I think you arrive at more interesting and powerful pieces of media. Whereas with film, because it's more on a per project basis, and to get anywhere significant you have to apply to funding from whoever, and then the studio will be like, well, we really just don't like the scene where he tells the white man he's bad. Can we make it that the white man does a good thing or something?
Yeah.
You know, whatever example you want to take.
I think it's certainly true that with Netflix there are fewer gatekeepers than there are with film.
Mm.
And I think that's actually a really relevant part of this discussion as well, because...
Steven's trying to gatekeep.
Well, it's sort of like... I mean, you've made this point before, Callum. It's just like, where whenever the Academy or... dare I mention it for fear of provoking another rant, Sundance, like, sort of, when they get angry about, like, the changing medium, the way that the industry is changing and the streaming and the way we consume media is changing, a lot of it seems to be coming from, like, but if we're not here to decide what's good or not, then what's the point of us? To which the answer is,
there
it's
isn't.
A very good question.
Yeah. I went through a phase in university when... me and my friends used to do the Oscars challenge. We would try and watch absolutely everything that was nominated. And, you know, over the course of like 3-4 years, we made attempts to do so. And with each passing year, I became less inclined to bother, because what I ended up doing was seeing, in many cases, a lot of very good films. And then I would see those very good films not get rewarded or recognised. And I realised, oh, my interpretation of what is very, very good differs wildly from the Oscars. I don't think that my interpretation of these particular films being good is incorrect. Therefore, the Oscars must just have a dissent opinion, which means they don't really matter to me that much. So why am I bothering paying attention to what this particular group of... when I looked into it at the time, so I was just like, I don't know who the Academy is. They're the people that you thank. I didn't realize, like, oh, it's a bunch of old film people who've made a bunch of specific films that have a lot of money. Ah, okay, you know. And then they thought Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close was worthy of being included in contention for the best picture of that year.
Yeah,
it gave Sandra Bullock an Oscar for The Blind Side. You're just like, that movie's terrible and kind of racist and awful.
Well, I mean, the Blind Side like has issues. The only thing I'd say about The Blind Side, which is, if anything, we've gone downhill from there. As I understand it, at the very fucking least, The Blind Side is based on a book by the person of colour in that situation, where at least they were like, this is what happened. I saw an interview with him
where he was genuinely annoyed about how he'd been portrayed.
Oh, really?
Because it has the whole thing where it's like, he's never played football before. And he's like, no, I played extensively in high school and had done very well. I knew what I was doing. I didn't need my foster mum, whom I love in real life, to tell me how to play football because I knew.
Oh, really? Then it's just the same. Yeah. Okay.
Fucking Jesus.
Why did you doubt it?
How dare I have faith in the Academy for a fleeting second?
Never go broke by underestimating them. Oh, boy.
Netflix's model isn't strictly, because, I mean, one of the other reasons they're annoying people, and presumably Spielberg, is, like, hearing whispers of this as well, is they're also annoying film festivals, because sometimes Netflix is just like, do you want to make a film? Here is a load of money, which I think is where they're being most disruptive. They're also disrupting film festivals by coming in and just buying stuff.
Hmm.
And because they don't have to worry about, like, what distributors perceive theatres want, which is often based on imagined demographics, Netflix is just like, here's some money, we'll put it on. And then that fucks with film festivals as well. The one thing, it's about watching every Oscars film. It is interesting that I think you do see people who are like, oh, we decided to watch every Oscars film this year. And most people do lose faith in it. And I think that's because most people, like, the Oscars definitely matters and is worth discussion. The when the Oscars will truly not be worth discussing is when it stops affecting box office.
And it
definitely does.
Coming back to economics again, yeah.
Yeah, like, I was on a flight right when the Oscars movies of that year were like, basically, they were all, you could watch them all on that flight.
Yeah.
And I, because I'm a fucking nerd and I do this kind of thing, when it was like late and everyone was watching a film, I went and stood at the back of the room, and because I watched a lot of films, I could tell which film was which.
Oh.
A third of the plane watching the Oscars films.
Interesting.
And so it's like, and I think that if you look at the numbers, generally like about a third of people, but they won't see every Oscars film, they will see one or two.
Yeah.
They will see the ones where they were like, I might like that kind of thing, and now there's like the Oscar thing and there's a trailer and whatever, then I'll go and see it. But that, even that, that makes a member of the public go see like one or two movies that they weren't gonna, that's massive. And it makes a difference.
Even just based on like anecdotal stuff, off the back of the Oscars that just happened, the number of people I have heard suddenly turn around being talking about Bohemian Rhapsody.
Mm,
and like the massive advertising push that's received like post Oscars has been wild.
As a completely different film. Because when I saw it, I saw it and I was like, I think lots of the criticisms of this movie are valid. I think that, but I was also like, it's basically just like a, you know, it's like a good time biopic. Like, I imagine this will be forgotten pretty quickly, except for the stuff in it that was dumb. And then I was like, this is gonna what? And now suddenly it's this movie that we all have to talk about forever. And it's just so weird.
I still haven't seen it because it didn't look particularly interesting to me. And then I saw that clip where people saying, oh, it's been nominated for Best Editing. And this looks a bit of a mess. I'm not going to really bother with this. You know,
yeah. Of the things that I think the movie
does well, is editing not one of them?
No.
Yeah, because I can think of lots of things that film, like, I have complicated feelings about that film, and I knew I would have going in, especially with the accusations against Bryan Singer, the things that Rami Malek said about whether or not Freddie Mercury was a gay icon, or rather the things he didn't say. Made me feel like, also there was all the rumour milling before it came out that it wasn't going to touch on his sexuality at all. That turned out not to be true.
Mm.
So there was already before I went, you know, going into that film, like, this is going to be a thing for me.
Yeah.
Even when I finished watching it, I'm like, right, I can't decide my opinion yet because I have to read about what actually happened. And there's like certain inaccuracies in it, and that's always going to be a problem with biopics, because you can't neatly fit a person's life into a three-act film.
And if you could, it would be fucking boring.
Yeah. and so there's like things where they took liberties with the truth, where I'm like, well, yes, of course they did. And then there's other things where they took liberties with the truth, and it's like, well, that sort of portrays things in a way that, why are you focusing so much on his one straight relationship for the duration of the film? Why are you doing...
Freddie Mercury was known for many things. Monogamy wasn't really, you know, one of them.
I mean, I think he was probably like about the first... I think maybe Freddie Mercury was the reason someone had to explain to me what gay meant. Like, it was just... It was like, you know, one of the first things I learned about him. Because they were one of the first bands I liked. And then, yeah, so it was... But I have to admit, when I saw the film, the fact there was so much focus on his one straight relationship... That I didn't have a strong feeling about it either way. I was just like, it seems like a shame that this person who clearly did so much for him at the end, at the end of the film, not the end of his life, has not received the focus that they did. And then afterwards, when, you know, people, including GM, were like, wait, this was really stupid though. And I was like, oh yeah, you're right. But it should have, but I'm straight. And like, I didn't think about it as much as I should have done. That's it.
Just coming back to something that we were talking about, how the perception of the Oscars has a measurable box office impact. You know, we talked about how it makes money. Coming back to the idea of it being a political machine versus an artistic machine, I think one thing that's really quite interesting is that with this year, there was that point where they were like, well, we're not going to televise cinematography or editing.
Yeah.
Which, that was... It's so weird. It was such a weird choice. Because I get, like, you know, us and the people that we know and the friendship groups that we have, we move in quite media-aware circles, right? When we say the term cinematography, we understand what cinematography is. You know, we understand what editing is and how it functions because we've all either worked in, have made films or whatever, and have done that kind of stuff. Other people don't get that, and I'm like, that's fine. It's not a requirement for you to know what those things are in order to properly appreciate film. The thing that I can't quite square in my head is, like, yes, these are going to be awards that the general public doesn't really care about because they're quite niche. Well, niche. They're not
visible. That's why we care so much about actors, is because they're the ones we see on screen.
Exactly.
They're the ones that lead the marketing campaigns to get bums in seats. You can't say, you know, this, like, even director. Well, unless it's a bit like Steven Spielberg, Quentin Tarantino, maybe. But
Scorsese, probably.
Yeah, but you can't say, produced by the same producer as this film.
And producers. I feel like...
Well, yeah. You say... Yeah, oh yeah, it's that.
Sometimes you can say, like, from the people who brought you this.
Yes,
then. But then, like editor, certainly not. Yeah. Or even, like, oh, look, Harry Gregson-William does the score. Like, for me, that would work.
Hans Zimmer is always a get for me because his music's great. And Joe Hisaishi as well. Yeah. But the thing is, what I don't get is that if they are trying to cultivate this perception as being seen as an artistic institution that rewards film for the artistic merit of the things that it did, I can't understand the logic behind them going, well, let's just not televise these awards that people don't fully understand. Surely it only helps your brand and your artistic perception to be saying, look, this thing that you, Johnny Public, don't quite understand, this is the best one of that. We are trying to explain to you in some way what this is and how it works and how to have an appreciation of it. Because I didn't study film in any serious capacity at all. I didn't really get into film until I was 18, which is when I was at uni and I started hanging out with film students and started, you know, in part, watching the Oscars. And a genuine question I had at age 18 when we were watching it in first year in my room when I'd known these guys for like a couple of months, I was like, what's cinematography? And they were like, right. Then followed a long conversation, and then when we were watching films together and stuff, they would take a point to be like, look, this is how this is working, and do you see how the camera is doing this, that, the other? And now I have an understanding of what that is. And I appreciate that. And the Oscars was, in some senses, a gateway for me to find out what that is, because it provoked the discussion by saying, this is a term that you don't know.
So this is going to sound like it's off topic, but I promise it's going to come back to it if I can remember my own train of thought.
We'll hold you to it.
Yeah. This is a non-rhetorical question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the jokes in BoJack Horseman about managers versus agents are funny?
Yes, but because of, like, people I know and situations that I've seen that, like, come together to remind me of things that I recognise and also be a hyper-realised version of that.
Well, hold on a sec, because I don't know these jokes. Maybe our dear one listener might not either, so explain this to me.
So basically, in BoJack Horseman, there's a... I wouldn't say it's even a running joke. There's like a few where it comes up, where... Because the show's set in LA, and version of LA inhabited by talking animals, but otherwise fairly similar
Hollywood.
To the one. Hollywood. Yeah, Hollywood, but actually fairly similar to the real one. There's a running joke where no character can explain. Well, it's the difference between a manager and an agent, and specifically what a manager does. And I was asking Nick, because Nick's someone who, you know, doesn't work in the industry, and also, you know, came to it a bit later.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I was just like... But you say you think it's funny because of, like, people you know in similar situations.
Exactly, yeah, I've encountered those situations secondhand. And also, I think there's some crossover with theatre stuff. Like, you could do pretty much the same joke with, like, what... Well, you can't so much now because it's become more of an accept term. But, like, I remember, you know, back in, like, the early 2000s and 10s, it was, like, you could say, what is a dramaturg? And you would have pretty much a similar kind of discussion because it's very difficult to actually articulate cleanly what that role does in the same way, and I can understand and appreciate the comedy inherent to that.
Right, so it's like, essentially, we both think that that joke is funny because we both work in some kind of entertainment or arts industry.
Yes.
And so, I guess that's the thing I'm trying to figure out is, because I feel like BoJack Horseman has a pretty wide appeal, like, that goes beyond, it can't just be industry people watching it. Like, and it's hard to know with Netflix, which is one of the things that maybe is good, maybe is bad. They never release their viewing figures. But, like, just in terms of conversation, and so...
It's still being made, which is always a good sign.
Yeah, which means loads of people must be watching it. And I just feel like whether... When people... Are there a group of people watching BoJack Horseman being like, I don't specifically work in the entertainment industry, but this manager versus agent thing is still funny to me because of context? It does the Academy Awards make things like who is the best cinematographer and who is the best editor make it interesting? I mean, I think there are some things I'll never be able to explain, like the difference between like the two sound awards, which I can't even name off the top of my head.
Editing and mixing.
That's it, yeah. Editing versus sound mixing. Like, don't ask me to explain. But, sorry, everyone at work, but... yeah, it's...
The views of Callum Smith are not the views of the parent company for which he works.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I think you can infer a lot from context. I don't even think it's people really need to work that hard at it. Like, I remember watching Frasier as a kid, and they would make some intellectual joke about something I knew nothing about.
Niles, what's wrong with my salad?
but just by you know, presenting it confidently, like, you can still infer why it's funny. And it's like, oh, I didn't know that, but you've taught me that now and told me that it's funny, so I'm laughing anyway.
Yeah.
Right, or like Always Sunny in Philadelphia, you sort of know from minute one, it's like, it's a very popular show over here, British people don't make jokes about how Philly's a shithole.
but we do make jokes about places in the UK, which could be cultural shorthand.
Yeah, exactly. And like, Philly's kind of that.
Fucking Milton Keynes.
Well, yeah, if anyone like, well, I'm trying to think what the equivalent. I'm not going to say what I think the equivalent is. I think it might piss people off. What I will say is, if you would like to know what Philly is like IRL and why that layer of Always Sunny is funny, Google compilations of stuff people in Philadelphia do when they win the Super Bowl.
Oh, they keep punching horses.
They steal trees. They, like,
they shit, it's
they
so
shit
in
funny.
The streets. Like,
yeah, it's just,
didn't someone eat dog shit during the last time they won or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, just in got really hyped up. They tip over cars.
A man tried to fight a bus. Like, it's it's so good.
Oh boy! But this is so. Come back to my point.
Yeah. Anyway, things are funny because of context, yeah. Or like, we know they're interesting because of context.
Yeah. But this is the thing: I don't understand the rationale of why an organization that its entire brand is "We are the artistic benchmark for this industry" would try and lower the profile of specific aspects of their own brand.
Yeah.
The message
they're saying is that this does not matter.
Yeah, and it's like when people who work in the industry. Editing and cinematography matter a lot.
Mm.
Editing perhaps more than lots of other things that get a lot more fucking
Star Wars
play.
Was saved in the edit.
Yeah. Jaws was saved in the edit. Like, so many movies. It's ridiculous that they did that, and I don't understand the rationale why. Because I'm like, oh, do you want a tighter show? You know, maybe cut out, like, the 3 song and dance numbers that no one gives a shit about. You know?
I mean, I think the problem is the Academy are fighting against two things. One which they can change but don't want to confront, and the other which they can't change and don't want to confront. The one which they can't change is that the way people watch TV has just changed. We do not live in the era where, like, millions and millions of people watch the finale of one show on TV. Like, it's just, that's not... Like, I think I think Jim and I on our TV podcast have definitely discussed that, where you look at the viewing figures for something like Game of Thrones and the finale, and it's like a teeny tiny fraction of what, say, the finale of a big TV show in the 80s would have had.
Yeah,
because
okay,
there were just fewer channels and people watched their stuff. So there were probably more people watching the Oscars then, and they're all old. They were probably already old in the 80s, some of them. So they're all going like, why is no one watching us anymore?
And then someone tries to explain to them,
but then they have to put their hearing aid in. It just takes a while. And then the other side of it is that their show is just so non-inclusive. And you can say like, oh, SJW, blah, blah, blah. But the fact of the matter is, actually, if you look at the numbers, being inclusive gets bums in seats and makes people watch. And the Academy just keep giving awards to movies that are literally about them.
Mm.
And if you keep doing that, people will lose interest. They will go through exactly the sort of moment that you did. And then that also...
He's talking to Nick when he says...
Sorry, yeah. Sorry. That Nick did, where you say, you know, I watched every Oscars movie for a number of years, and eventually it was just like, well, this is not interesting because the type of movies that continue to win...
Yeah, and I saw movies that we thought might be nominated, and then those movies didn't get nominated, and I thought they were great.
Yeah.
I was like, what? And you didn't, what?
Yeah, why did the Daft Punk Tron Legacy soundtrack not get nominated?
I
know that film was kind of trash, but that
bad.
Fucking soundtrack, it's still being used in TV commercials.
100%, that's a great soundtrack.
Right, it's just... And then I think the other thing that comes as a sort of subset of that problem is that the Oscars has just become... Like, I mean, my sort of... Apart from some personal experiences, I was never had the attention of the Academy on me, but like being in the wider film industry and seeing how the wider mechanism worked.
You're definitely the most seasoned of the three of us.
But the other thing was, I just decided to listen to the IndieWire podcast for a year to get the full cycle of the Oscars process, because they cover the whole thing for a year. And that was the real, like, all the stuff around about where it's like, Sundance is not the cutting edge, and it's all political, and it's all power structures, and it's very old-fashioned in reality, and it's all... That was the, like, quote-unquote, like, sort of losing my faith moment, where I was just like, this is, if you just look at that machine for a second, it just has nothing to do with artistry. Mm. It has a lot to do with relationships between indie financiers and relationships between executives at studios. And if you listen to these podcasts, you can find out about how it all works. And it's sort of interesting in the way that, like, politics is interesting in a horse race kind of way.
Yeah.
But it has nothing to do with which films are good, in the same way that, you know, a lot of, not always, but a lot of politics has nothing to do with the person who wants to change things the most. And it's like, you know, but we have to elect politicians. We don't have to give out Oscars.
The other thing, a thing I read recently was, I read an interview with Armie Hammer, of all people, who, I have very conflicting feelings about Armie Hammer, because I'm like, I feel like he's a good dude who's tried hard, but has also made some odd choices. But it was basically off the back of him being, on the Basis of Sex, is that the Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
Yeah.
Movie. He was talking about the Oscar campaign he was part of for Call Me By Your Name, right?
Yeah.
And he said one of the things was, he was like, I never want to do that again. Because he said the thing is, it's so much press and so much work and so much ridiculous stuff on it. And he said, like, you know, while it's always nice to be nominated and everything, and, you know, it's an interesting thing to be a part of, he said, I would be perfectly happy if I was never involved in another Oscars campaign ever again. Which... On a basic level of, like, you make a good movie and then you maybe win an award, you should think, like, oh, I've done the thing, I did the thing, it's out in the world, maybe I'll do some press for it because, like, it's a big budget thing and I have to go on talk shows and say, well, it was really just really nice to work with Steve and he's just such a great director, and that kind of stuff. And then that's it. Then you're on to the next thing. It's ridiculous to me that I think an actor would be like, I don't want to chase this accolade in my industry because it's horrendous to do it.
I would also say that, like, the thing that I think maybe the general public get is when people are like, Oscar campaigns are stupid. When Armie Hammer's saying that, he's not just talking about what, quote-unquote, we as the general public see in terms of press. Like, the press junkets on YouTube where he's sat in front of the poster and he goes, well, it's really nice to work with Steven.
Yeah.
And, like, I have, because I went to a film school that was in New York and they use us to fill the spare seats.
Mm.
I've been to some of the, because there are many, many, many groups that are sort of like, things like the New York Critics Circle that have the ability to vote within the Academy. And there are lots of them in LA as well. And basically the actors, like, it's so weird. You'll go to a screening room that is in what looks like an apartment block, and there'll be a really small, very nice movie theater with some seats, and you'll watch like a movie, and like about half the seats will be full. There'll be about 12 people there. Most of them will be old white male senior citizens. And then they'll be like, and oh, and here's Will Smith. And like, he'll come out and just be like, what the fuck? Like, the amount of money people pay to see this guy live. And then like, two of these old people are asleep. And they'll be like, do you have any questions? They'll be like, what was it like to work with M. Night Shyamalan? And then Will Smith has to be at like his most entertaining. And they have to do loads of those. Basically, what Armie Hammer was told, like, okay, so you're going to do normal press. And he's like, okay, fine. They were like, right. And now then you're going to have to go and talk to the Illuminati 25 times.
Yep.
Like, you'll have to just talk to the Illuminati 25
times. Dance for them, Armie. Yeah, dance. Yeah. Be tall and handsome. Yeah. And commanding. Literally, everything they want.
Literally that, because they like it when famous people come to the home to visit them. And like,
That's so weird.
Sorry, I'm sounding ageist, but it's like, I just mean it to illustrate the fact of like, their age is not the issue. Their relevancy and contact with the general public and the actual practical film industry is an issue.
How are you meant to have an actual... I mean, I'm not going to get too bogged down the whole like, what is objectivity, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But how are you, if you're meant to be representing an organisation that on paper is just meant to award artistic quality with merit... How are you meant to have a normal person's perception of that film when you can talk to literally everybody involved in it and have them charm you?
Right.
Like, do they not see that that's like a conflict of interest?
But then again, it's not what the Academy is for. It's purely a marketing tool.
It's about
tool.
Making money. Yeah. That's the thing of it.
The other sort of topic that's sort of relevant here that I want to touch on is, because part of the discussion about whether or not Netflix movies are deserve to be at the Academy or deserve to be nominated is, well, how do you define a film? And it seems to be like that Steven Spielberg, at least the line he's taking on this, whatever his real feelings are, his argument is part of it is how much money they've spent, which he says is unfair, but we've touched on that. But his other one is that... is that, like, for a film to count as a film, it needs to have a theatrical release. And Roma did have a theatrical release, like, limited, like, I think, but that was just because people complained.
Yeah.
It's just sort of go like, well, if that is your definition of what a film is if it's been screened in a cinema, then that is a definition that isn't going to serve us for very much longer, because the way that the industry is changing, or at least filmmaking as a art form is changing, is now that anyone can do it. I've had this conversation with you, Callum, where when ContraPoint sort of like mockingly refers to herself as a filmmaker, when you're saying, no, you are a filmmaker, you're making like some of the best content around right now. Just because your content is on YouTube doesn't mean you're not a filmmaker.
Yeah.
Like, is a film just going out and shooting something with a camera and then putting it somewhere where people can see it?
Well, as someone who's literally working on making a feature, which we're just going out and filming stuff with a camera and we're going to put it on somewhere where people can see it, like, I think one of the things I just want to touch on really quickly is that, you know, saying that, oh, the barrier of entry should be if it had a theatrical release, which... If you were dealing with, like, a specific, I don't know, weirdly subversive filmmaker, like, if you just wanted to stop Harmony Korine or something from getting films anyway, you'd be like, if you don't get it into a theatre, Harmony, you're never going to get an Oscar. And assuming that he gave a shit about that and was like, okay, I'll have to maybe tone down things that actually do work and intersect with the film industry a bit more. Netflix, if they really wanted to have one of the movies that they finance be in the Oscars, they could just pay for a theatrical run.
Well, it's not well, hard. Even more than that, like they could hard. Just launch their own cinema chain.
They shouldn't. So that would be a bad idea.
But let's just hypothetically speaking, let's imagine they launch their own cinema thing, and it's like it's sort of Netflixy in that, like, oh, you can like the audience votes on what they want to see that night or something like that. Terrible idea. But but that's the thing. If they did that, that would have their content qualify more for what like for the Academy in the way that Spielberg is sort of complaining it doesn't. But you, I feel like his complaint wouldn't have changed.
Yeah,
like it's not. It's, it doesn't feel to me like it's really about whether or not a film gets a theatrical release.
It's also like the thing that the thing is, Oscar movies. Some of the one like some Oscar movies do play in cinemas outside of big cities, but generally Oscar movies sort of live and die on their screens within big cities, which is not, and this is something that Spielberg has forgotten, is not the general public anyway.
No.
And so it's like, actually, the stupid thing is, like, Roma, if you actually look at, like, Curzon and cinemas like that, like Curzon, the Prince Charles, like cinemas in London, it played for quite a while. And they wouldn't have played it for that long if no one was coming to see it. So the fact of the matter is, people who were really interested in, like, I must see things on the big screen, like, Netflix can just release it in cinemas anyway and they'll get a bit, you know, get a bit of extra money on the side.
Yeah.
And then for everyone else, which weren't getting these films in cinemas anyway, whether or not they were on Netflix, they can now watch them on Netflix whenever they fucking want.
Yeah.
This is because the thing is that the really, really powerful thing that Netflix is doing is increasing access for audiences.
Yeah.
And that is really, really important. It's not like you have to drive to the nearest big city to see a movie. Like, more people are going to see films, and then we're going to get more filmmakers, and that should be something that Spielberg's celebrating, and he's not.
One of the things that friend of the show, Dr. Laz Carter, wrote in his PhD thesis on the globalization of anime, one of the bits which actually may have ended up on the cutting room floor now I think about it, so this might be secret material from your thesis, Laz, sorry, is that he did research into the piracy metrics and viewing metrics and total money for Game of Thrones. Because more people pirated Game of Thrones than any other TV show ever. That's a legitimate thing that happened, which you can see as a precursor to streaming services. People wanted to watch the thing, and they didn't want to shell out for HBO, so they got a hold of it through other methods. If you were to pitch something like Game of Thrones, with the amount of money it costs to now make Game of Thrones, prior to Game of Thrones existing, people would be like, that's insane. You cannot put that much money into a TV show about dragons, which is really, really complicated, and costs millions upon millions of pounds to make, sorry, dollars to make per episode. Mm. I think one of the things you're saying is that, like, you know, the thing that's been interesting, I think, with the, like you say, the democratization of access to all of this stuff, is I think that a lot of content creators and, you know, production studios and stuff are realizing that people are a lot more open to different kinds of ideas to what conventional market wisdom used to say. And we are getting, again, more diverse content, albeit that content is offset by the fact that there's the flat fee for entry for streaming services. Mm. It's like the money that I don't actually pay for Netflix because I don't have a Netflix account. Thanks, Jim. Love you.
You're welcome.
The money that I would theoretically pay for a Netflix account.
The money that this household pays for.
This household has
a Crunchyroll account and an Amazon account and a Netflix account.
We don't need one each.
Amazon Prime as well. Amazon account, sorry. But part of that money goes towards financing something like that I watch and enjoy on Netflix, like Stranger Things, but it also goes towards a hypothetical cake adventure show that I don't watch or have interest in. And that's fine, because...
What do you mean you don't love cake adventure shows?
It's really good. I mean, season 4 is where it really
is. That really good? But the thing of it is that I don't... It's interesting, because in the way that it gives lots of people access to lots of different things for a single flat fee, it also in many ways kind of like pushes back against the idea of, you know, market forces, quote unquote, where people can vote with their dollar. It comes back, I think we're coming more towards the idea of the attention economy being a much realer thing, because Netflix has the computer which tells us what people actually, despite they may talk about, oh yeah, I've totally, you know, went on Mubi and watched all of the, it's like, you know, we can just look at your metrics and you spent, you know, you watched 6 seasons of Dog Cat Fights of Broomstick.
Tell everyone.
And we know what is actually being watched and what content is actually being consumed in big amounts, and then we can push towards that. So we're having in some ways kind of less say in what gets made, but we're able to make our opinions, our interest in something registered a lot more directly. I think it's an interesting inversion of like the conventional idea of, like, you know, vote with your wallet.
Yeah,
it's now vote with your eyes.
Although it's sort of worth mentioning as well that I think a problem that, I mean, they must be aware of this and yet steamrolling ahead anyway. The fact that, like, now everyone wants a streaming service. Now Disney is launching their own. We've got Amazon Prime now. And I think Warner Brothers was working on one of that. Like, so we're going to have a billion Netflixes. And then we're getting to the point where, like, Netflix has cancelled a lot of shows recently. And I think that is because of this.
Well, yeah, Disney's taking Marvel away from them.
Yeah, Disney want to do their own. And the problem is, having, like, the advantage of Netflix was, like, oh, you pay a flat fee and you have all of this content.
Or at least most of the content.
You have, like, yeah. And the thing, and people aren't just going to pay more fees to have all of the streaming services so they can have all the content. What they're going to do instead is, if there is one show on a streaming service that they don't pay for, they will pirate it.
I was going to say, if there's one show that they want on a specific service, that will be the service they get, because
they may pick one which has most of the stuff, or they may decide, well, actually, none of these are worth it anymore because there's not enough on any of them. I'm just going to pirate this again. Mm. Not realizing that the part of the success of Netflix was because, oh, let's have a system that already works in the way that people are consuming media, which is piracy.
Yeah, which is having it in your house you want it anytime.
Yeah, and so we'll have that, but you can pay for it, so the quality is better and it's easier to find. That's what you're paying for. And then the moment that they lose that is when people are going to be like, fuck this, I'm not going to pay everyone for when I can just pirate it again.
Well, because the whole point was, like, you know, if you look at the whole thing was like, no, I'm not going to pay that much pounds a month for Sky, because I'm just going to get it on all Netflix, like, lol, haha, fuck you, I'm winning. Whereas, I mean, probably not quite, but if we all sat down together and we tallied up the amount that we each pay a month for the streaming service that we contribute to our household, like, if you may be through, like, the Disney streaming service and something else in there, it's probably approaching how much a subscription to Sky would cost anyway. Mm. And, you know, if, like, we all just... I'm not saying we should do that, because I don't want Sky. But, like, you know what I mean? Just in terms of, like... One of the just big things was that you were saving money. Mm. And are we really saving money anymore?
For us, it's split. Like, we're still only paying for one each because we're a house share.
No, but I'm saying, even if we did... Even, like... Yeah, we're saving money, but if we added up, like, the amount that I pay for Amazon Prime, that you pay for Netflix, that you pay for Crunchyroll, and then, you know what I mean? Like, we're probably approaching what it would cost for us to just... get Sky.
Well, it's interesting. The anime community had a kind of microcosm version of where all the streaming services were super diversified, which is actually undergone a bit of a weird shift, because there was Crunchyroll and there was Funimation, and then Amazon was like, we want to try and get involved, because of course Amazon wanted to try and get involved. So they launched Anime Strike. But one of the things for Anime Strike was that it was an additional bolt onto an Amazon Prime service. And there were some good shows that they used their big Amazon money to get exclusively on there, but it didn't work because lots of people were saying, okay, I've already got a Crunchyroll, I've already got a Funimation subscription, you now want me to get an Amazon Prime subscription and then get Anime Strike on top of that, and I can't get just Anime Strike by itself. That's not really going to fly. And to combat the fact that they were splitting a lot of their potential viewer base, you had Funimation and Crunchyroll went into a partnership and started showing each other's content on each other's sites. Just recently, they've actually broken up that merger, which meant a ton of shows from, mostly from Crunchyroll, because Funimation is actually a dubbing and distribution service rather than just a streaming platform, got taken off Crunchyroll. And now no one's really sure what the next thing is going to be, because whatever happened behind the scenes, Funimation decided that having the partnership with Crunchyroll was no longer worth it, even though Crunchyroll is the biggest streaming platform for anime at the moment. Remember when, the streaming service that lots of people got really fucking dewy-eyed about that died?
Oh, bloody Filmstruck, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to end up with more examples of that, where there are going to be, it's going to be a little bit like the craze when there was a lot of Memorpagers in, like, the early 2000s after WoW got really big. And you had every company in the world trying to have their own World of Warcraft, and then realizing, oh, fuck, this isn't working! And now we have, like... World of Warcraft is still an unassailable juggernaut, an absolute powerhouse in that particular industry, and is the defining mass multiplayer online RPG. And there is Final Fantasy XIV, A Realm Reborn, which, if you know about the production and how that thing actually came to be, is a fucking miracle that that exists. Every other RPG is smaller, online RPG is smaller than those services by orders of magnitude in terms of scale, in terms of player base, in terms of content and everything else. And if you try and go into that, if you don't have massive financial resources or a really, really good, unique selling point, you crash and burn.
I mean,
and I think we're going to see more of that as this goes on.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that was another BoJack Horseman joke where it's like Todd goes and gets a job for the streaming service on whattimeisit.com. Like, because just that everyone is, yeah, you're absolutely right, everyone is trying to do that. I do think one, and like, I do think one thing that's important to say is, one of the things that Spielberg and his ilk will like to throw around is this idea that Netflix is somehow bad for movies. First of all, this dated idea of a TV movie that, like, you know, a movie is Star Wars and a TV movie is the Star Wars Christmas special.
How dare you? How dare they?
Yeah, which is just not the case anymore. Because, you know, Bad Boys 2 is a movie and The Sopranos is a TV show. The other thing is that, like, they all put the idea that it's, like, bad for cinema. It's stopping people going to cinema. It's not. No. Like, cinema attendance figures are actually going up. Hmm. The only thing that's changing is the willingness of industry entities and distributors, which, frankly, Spielberg is one of the few people who has the power to genuinely change what they do if he was willing to take a financial hit.
Yep.
It's the willingness of them to put certain things in certain theatres. And if they're not going to do that, someone will do it for them. But yeah, people are not going to stop going to cinema. If I really thought the streaming services were stopping cinemas from existing, I'd be really worried, because I go to the cinema an above average amount. Mm. I see things in cinemas a lot more than independent film people who moan about how streaming services are killing cinema, anecdotally.
Yeah.
Like, I go a lot more. But, like, it's just not the two things are affecting each other, but not in a audience share way. Most people just do both.
This complaint comes up. Like, I've heard people say that that paper maps are obsolete now that phones exist. It's like, it's not. It's ridiculous.
I can kind of see what they're trying to say, but
it's
also
the same sort of complaint about, like, printer's dead because the Kindle's a thing. It's like,
books made.
Stairs still exist just because the elevator was invented.
Well, and also, like, the print book industry makes so much fucking goddamn money. Like, people who say that, it's like, yes, there have been reductions in it. It's been hitting journalism a lot because journalism is meant to be disposable print media, but the literary industry, it makes a lot of fucking money. People still buy lots of books.
Because people like bookshops.
Yeah.
I think like the point that sort of rounds off all of this is that, like, industries change, and the way to respond to that is to adapt. It's not to try and force it to go back to what it was before, so things can continue working in the way that we're familiar with. Because
if you hold back the tide, like, that's, it's a phrase that means you can't hold back the thing that you're trying to hold back.
I don't want to, like, because I know that Steven Spielberg's, like, does have a bit of a point in what he says, so I don't really want to just write him off as old man yelling at cloud. But there is an element of that, and certainly if the Academy does what he wants, that is how it's going to come across.
I'm less old man yelling at cloud and more that old man with lots of money has been told by his accountant that he's probably going to lose a lot of money over the next couple of years because he's feeling he's going to become less relevant. And rather than being like, oh, that's just because, you know, I've been in the industry for like 5,000 years and I've made some of the biggest and most influential movies ever, but really I don't have that much in touch with the common zeitgeist and moving forward, and I have this sense of pretend power because I'm a big figure in the fucking awards thing that tells people what the good shit is, and I want to be relevant and I want to make money and I want to have my fingers on the strings of power. It's less yelling at cloud and more just like scrabbling to try and keep together his material worth. Fuck you, Steven Spielberg. Warhorse was shit.
That's mine! Is basically his. Yeah, I mean, like I said before, I've had the realisation that, like, if you ask me to name the three most, not that I like best, but most important filmmakers.
Oh, that, I already want to go, what do you mean by important?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, no, I mean important in terms of, like, making stuff that has the chance to influence society in a positive way through the medium of video.
So the word you want is influential.
Like, most cultural capital.
Three most, potentially influential in the type of stuff they're making may have a domino effect. I would say, like, only one of them actually has movies in cinemas. It's Ryan Coogler. But that's the thing where I'm just like, I don't know if that's a shame or not. It's just like a weird thing to realise when it's like, when you went to, like, yeah, it's a strange place we're in, but hey, see what happens.
Yeah. So we've got like 2 minutes.
2 minutes,
of time
and
to
I feel like we rounded out the point.
You meant to wonder when he said, "What's around this all?" I was like, "We got 4 minutes, Jim. This is going to be a long, slowed up bird." The thing I would say is that I really like you said, the thing about, you know, that the Oscars will, you know, stop being relevant when it stops having a box office impact. It's like, I know this is going to sound very sort of naive and I want to believe in the power of art and stuff like that. Yeah. If you want to have that sense of prestige, and with prestige comes economic impact because people want to see the thing that they're told is good, whether it's good or not. You know, you want to be inclusive, the whole in-group mentality stuff, like, oh, everyone's watching it, I'll watch it too, so I'll be part of the conversation. I just feel that the Oscars has been running how many years now? Like, they had an anniversary.
Whatever number they say each year when they're the bloody first Academy Awards, yeah. That's how many. It's a lot of years.
Like it's 50 something.
Yeah,
it's like, more than 50 years.
Okay, what's 70? Who knows?
I think it's a century.
You've been running that long. Why not? This is the thing I don't get. If you want to really have your fucking artistic cake and eat it, right? Have a year where you just specifically put out shit, you know, that would not normally be in contention. Like, if they did that, one, I and, like, many other people in the sort of media awareness circles would be like, what the fuck are they doing? This is crazy. They nominated, like, you know, stuff that would never have even got, like, a snifter near it. Just take a year, or even a couple of years, and just do good artistic shit. Do you know what will happen? The profile of the Oscars will fucking skyrocket, and you will get a shitload of money for it. You'll be able to invest in these films, because it's basically, it's a form of rigging markets. Because if you say, oh, we have this massive cultural clout to tell people what to go see, I happen to be an investor involved in this film. Why don't we fund a tiny indie project that makes a really good movie for a tiny amount of money, we then put it on the Oscars, put it in for contention, give it an award, people want to go and see it, we all get a nice fucking payday. And I've just realised I've ended by saying, yeah, just commit fraud. Yeah. Like, sort of cultural fraud.
I mean, it's what they're kind of doing anyway, so...
Yeah.
The last thing I say is, like, if you want these things to change, you have to put your money, or if it's, in the case of streaming, your data where your mouth is. Like, go watch things that you wouldn't have watched before. Go pay to watch things that you wouldn't have watched before. Like, get them on Blu-ray, download them off iTunes, go see them in the cinema. Like, go see the stuff that you like. There is nothing worse than someone who says, like, I don't like the way that movies or music or games are going, and then, like, won't do anything about it. Yeah. Like, that's the most important thing. Is you have to, like, and also, you have to take a risk and watch stuff you wouldn't have watched before. I think that's the most important thing. It's like, if you want to do something about it, do that.
Yeah. Or make stuff.
That too. That's the other.
Yeah.
That even better.
Make things. Put out weird shit on YouTube. Try and get a deal with Netflix, you know?
Yeah.
Make a Netflix series about how shit the Academy is.
I'd watch it.
Oh, they're so developing that already. they're making Curb about it or something.
Just get spitting image puppets. And, like, do it that way. I'm just like, I don't know what animation is! Anyway. Jim, do you want to finish out the thing?
Yeah, the Academy Awards are a waste of time.
Yeah, but not as much as the... Wait, no, but less waste of a time than this podcast. I want to say that we're the better thing. Listen to this podcast and don't watch the Oscars. That's it. That's the ending.
What a Waste of Time featured the voices of me, Jim Woodall, Nick Hurd, and Callum Smith. Music by Anthony Bullinger.